is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Tale of Oceania in the 21st century. I welcome Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, who is our guide on this adventure, which is only halfway through. It puts one or two men who belong to the people of the Solomon Islands against the empire of the Chinese Communist Party. So far, it's a tie. Cleo, a very good evening to you. We begin in the year 2019. The capital of the Solomon Island group is Honiara on Guadalcanal Island. Guadalcanal, of course, famous for the combat that started the crawlback in the Pacific for the Marines, for the UN, United States, and for the people of Oceania. But now we're in the 21st century, and Japan is an ally of the United States and transparent and a democracy. And the villain, the threat, is the Chinese Communist Party. What happened in 2019 that changed forever the people of the Solomon Islands' a strength and vision of the future? Good evening to you.
Good evening. At the beginning of 2019, the Solomon Islands recognized Taiwan. And if you recognize Taiwan, that means you don't have a Chinese embassy. And those Chinese embassies function like forward operating locations for influence operations and spy bases. It gives you a level of protection of against the political warfare that the Chinese operate in. But they had been targeting, the Chinese Communist Party had been targeting specific people within the Solomon Islands political establishment, and one of them is thought to be the then governor, actually, of Guadalcanal. And they move up through the political systems, and there was an election, and a new prime minister got in, and he unilaterally switched the country from Taiwan to China. And so the Taiwanese left, and the Chinese operations just started flooding in. So it's a kind of an interesting case study, because you can see what happens from almost a standing start. There were some of these subnational engagements, but you know, when China really gets into a country, and Solomon's, as you mentioned, is incredibly strategically important. This was a big switch and a big win for Beijing, because it put them in a position where they could do what the Japanese wanted to do, which is cut off the sea lines of communication to Australia, but also it gave them access to substantial natural resources and good ports.
And the contest for China is deadly in earnest. Right now, the people of the Solomons have no weapons. So one man, his name is Sudiani, and one colleague, his name is Telefu, decide to stand up against the Chinese. Why? What was their motivation right away, Cleo?
So at the time of the switch, there was a new premier in the province of Malaita, which is across Iron Bottom Sound, effectively, from Guadalcanal. And they were very concerned about Chinese behavior. And when I say Chinese, you know, this is a very vague term, right? It's the Chinese Communist Party that I'm talking about specifically. But the way that it manifests is various state-owned or state-linked companies within the Solomon Islands, but also Chinese organized crime, which almost invariably tracks back to the Chinese Communist Party. And so the new premier, Daniel Sudani, didn't want any Chinese-linked companies, Chinese Communist Party-linked companies operating in his province. And at that time, Celsus Telefilu, who had been working in the prime minister's office, so at the national level, saw what was happening and became very concerned. And he left the national level and went to the provincial level to work with Suidani and others on trying to protect their province from what they anticipated would be a tsunami of corruption, illegal activity, environmental degradation, you know, just everything that comes along with Chinese-linked companies. And they put out the provincial government of Malaita, supported by the traditional chiefs, in 2019, put out this Aoki communique. Aoki is the name of the capital, which is extraordinary. It says they put a moratorium on all CCP-linked companies operating in the province. And the reasons given, one of them was they do believe in freedom of religion. They're both men of faith, and that Chinese Communist Party is systemically atheist, and that they didn't want people who were, you know, aggressively anti-faith of any sort operating in the province. They thought it was bad for their society. There were also environmental concerns, and they specifically said they didn't want the province to become a police state. So they were very clear-sighted about what it means when you get into bed with the Chinese Communist Party.
Now the action switches to one man against an empire and Daniel Suriani. And how will the Chinese? This is existential for them. This isn't a side deal. They mean to destroy Suriani. He needs medical help. He's blocked. How does he find what he needs, Cleo?
So soon after all of this, he does need he's getting in headaches that can't be explained, things like that, and he needs an MRI. There's no MRI in the country. Remember, this is a place that hopefully we'll talk about this later. Also, you know, Australia has said, "Don't worry, we're on top of it." You know, they love us, but the medical system is just horrific. And normally, when somebody like the premier of a province needs medical care, the federal government, national government, will help them with the cost to go for medical care outside the country. And in this case, Suriani is told, yeah, we'll help you with your medical costs, but you need to let the Chinese companies operate in the province. And he said no. So this is a story as much as it is even more about the horrific political warfare attacks of the Chinese Communist Party, about how there are people out there who are literally willing to put their lives on the line to protect their people from this sort of corruption in all senses that the Chinese Communist Party brings with it when it comes in.
A professor in India learns about Suriani's dilemma.
Yes.
Contacts directly the president of Taiwan. What happens?
And the president of Taiwan, even though the country has no diplomatic relations on humanitarian grounds, reaches out and enables him to come to Taiwan for medical care.
And that solves the dilemma, but it doesn't solve the political warfare underway because China is relentless and they mean to destroy Suriani and Filu as an example. Now they're going to buy the opposition. They've got a lot of money. Where do they spread their money?
They spread their money anywhere they think will be effective. They'll back every horse they can, but they spread it. This is a parliamentary system, so you can change the premier if the members of the parliament. The premier is like the governor, and if you buy off enough members of the legislature, they can vote for a new premier effectively, or they can, you know, have a vote of no confidence in that guy or woman, and that person leaves and then they vote in a new person. So they started spreading money around the province in order to see who would be susceptible to being bought off like that.
It works initially. In any event, they buy off much of the legislature of Malaita. So Guevara is about to step aside, but I don't want to get ahead. So Guevara was the man who was originally persuaded to switch to the Chinese Communist Party. So back in Malaita, what does the opposition look like there? Who is leading it?
So in Malaita, so the same thing is happening at the national level and at the provincial level where China's spreading around money, and they capture the national level. But, you know, they find somebody at the local level to front the vote of no confidence against Suriani, and it fails because the people of Malaita rally around, physically put themselves between this member of parliament and the door to the parliament so that he can't get into the building. The police get involved. There's no violence. And these are poor people who've just gathered up money to get the gas, to get to parliament because they're so concerned about the theft of their democracy. And the police calm everything down. This guy, apologizes. Suriani, you know, apologizes. Just out of protocol, there's conciliation. Things move on. While he had been away for medical treatment, all of this money had been spread around. He came back. It stabilized. But then the efforts continue. Eventually, the China bloc gets enough votes, votes out Sudani as premier, and then the national government takes away his elected seat for not recognizing the One China policy. So it just continues and continues and continues. Most recently, there was another election. He won back his seat. He sued for reinstatement of his to say that it was wrong to take away his seat, and he won that case, although he didn't. It was just a bare minimum win from the court system. And all of this is going to show now where the courts, if the court system has been captured. We know the political system has been captured, but we know that China's next phase is the court system, so that there's nowhere for good people to run.
We're going to bring this up to date. Wait, because we're going to come to what happens next and what are the possible solutions, and that will bring the Canberra government into the conversation and the Washington government as well. Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for Defense of Democracy. Why this matters is that this is a model for how China is turning Oceania against the United States and its allies and towards the Chinese Communist Party in Beijing, a model. And if it works in Solomon, it'll work elsewhere and is underway elsewhere. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.